they were only allowed to do one bell long cycle because the worry was that it might damage our breasts. You know, you got to worry about the titties and that maybe it would cause cancer. I'm not sure. So there was a worry that our internal organs could be damaged by these bells and the weight sitting on us and our breasts might be hurt.
Welcome to the Barbend Podcast, where we talk to the smartest athletes, coaches, and minds from around the world of strength. I'm your host, David Thomas Tao, and this podcast is presented by barbend.com. Today, I'm talking to kettlebell sport champion Kim Fox, who holds multiple all-time world records in the sport. She's also one of the most accomplished Americans to ever compete. If you're not familiar with kettlebell sport, this conversation is a solid introduction to what it entails, the intense mental and physical challenge involved, how a world champion trains, and the small but growing community of athletes and coaches around the globe. Kim shares insights from early on in her career through to today. Whether you're a diehard kettlebell fan or just looking to learn more about the world of strength, this is an episode we hope you'll enjoy. I do want to take a second to say we're incredibly thankful that you listen to this podcast. So if you haven't already, be sure to leave a rating and review of the Barbend Podcast in your app of choice. Now let's get to it. Kim Fox, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to do something a little different. Because your list of accomplishments in kettlebell sport is so long, I couldn't mention all of them in the intro. So I'm going to put you in the very awkward position of just listing off how big a deal you are in this sport as far as what you've accomplished, the records you've set. Just throw out some of your favorites here.
I wish I'd known that so I could have wrote them down prior to... okay, so probably the one that people know me most well for is I'm the absolute world record holder for women's two-arm long cycle in the professional division. So basically that means two 24-kilogram bells that I lifted 82 times in 10 minutes. So that's like the big one. But I also hold a world record in biathlon for the professional division with 115 jerks, and I think that one's 86 snatches or something, which is not impressive by any means. So don't be impressed by the number of snatches.
Oh, it's just a world record. Don't be impressed.
But the only impressive part is the jerks, because there's women that do way more reps than that. I am just really good at the two-bell part of it. I have a world record with the 28-kilogram bell doing long cycle. I think that was at 42 reps, but I did that again for a 5-minute set and I got 42 reps. So I'd be curious to see what I could get now. I did it again.
What if you only got 42 in 10 minutes though? What if you had an extra 5 minutes and you still only got 42 reps? That'd be messing with your mind, right?
I'd be pretty sad. So the other day, cause I can hold like two 24-kilogram bells overhead. Like I'll do, you know, static holds and I can hold them for, you know, like on the first round, you know, a minute 20, sometimes a minute 30 seconds. And, I had part of my program was to hold a plate, like a 45-pound plate overhead. And I was like, oh my God, it's going to go for like 5 minutes. So I was like, well, I wonder how long I can do it. So I put it overhead, but the positioning to hold a plate overhead is so different from holding kettlebells. Like ergonomically, it's not good. And I was about a minute in and my hands started to go numb. And then my arms like started like bouncing and jerking. The guy that was there while I was working out was like, what is wrong with you? Are you going to drop that? And I'm like, no, but I can't feel my arms anymore. So I only made it like maybe a minute and 45 seconds.
Even though it was less than half the weight, the position was so weird.
It was a little humbling. He's like, well, that's what you get.
So for kettlebell sport, I mean, I've been training kettlebell sport just a little bit. I'm still a newbie. And one thing I've learned about it is that it is difficult and it is as mental as it is physical, at least for someone who's not a particularly talented athlete. like myself, every training session seems like a mental challenge as much as a physical. 82 reps with the two bell long cycle in the professional division for women, that's 24 kilo bells, right? So those are not light.
It's 105 pounds. 105 pounds.
105 pounds total. So you did in 10 minutes 82 reps of the clean and jerk with those bells without putting it down. I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't realize about kettlebell sport when they hear these numbers. You can't set it down. There's no like resting on the floor, taking a few steps back and catching your breath. You are under those bells or swinging those bells for the entirety of those 10 minutes. That is a number that if you were to take an untrained but very strong male, there's no way in hell they would reach that if they did not have a lot of training in kettlebell sport. So the numbers you do are incredibly impressive. How did you get involved in this weird, I don't want to say little sport, but it is kind of small in the US. It's a small little community here. And it's so different than anything else we cover in strength. Like what attracted you to it? And how'd you even find out about it?
Honestly, it was a total accident. When I came back from deployment, I had met my husband, and I was really just training kettlebells, like the normal, like swings, push press, just doing normal kettle things.
A couple Turkish get-ups here and there.
Yeah, I mean, I was just working out with them, and I was like, oh, these are kind of fun. Like, you know, you get to swing them around, and that's kind of cool. I feel bad because I realized on the bar band interview that I said the person who introduced this to me, I said the wrong name.
We can correct that. We can make an edit. We'll have to retract part of the article, which will be the most awkward thing in the world. I don't think anyone's ever retracted part of a kettlebell article before.
I realized it because there's another guy I know with a similar name, and people were asking him if he trained me, and he was like, no. But he's like, thanks, but no. And now I just forgot his name. So this is what happened last time, because I was like, I'm so bad with names.
Well, when did you, let's start with this way. When did you came back from deployment? You were in the military. You came back from deployment. So, about what year is this that you learned kettlebell sport is a thing?
2006.
Okay.
So 2006, I'm training kettlebells. My husband is going through an internship, and the guy that he is working with does kettlebell sport. And he kind of just tells me, like, hey, you like working with kettlebells? Like, this is also like a competition. Well, you know, when I was in high school, I was super competitive. I played softball. I pretty much played like every sport. And, you know, like when you get older, like there's not really anything for you to compete in. So I was training jiu-jitsu. I was doing Muay Thai at the time. And, but I didn't necessarily want to start fighting. Like, I don't know. That wasn't like, I didn't want to like get my face pounded in.
Then you know what?
I don't think it's quite worth the money.
Completely,
so it's fine.
Completely.
But I mean, I like training it. So I really didn't have anything to compete in. I was playing like adult slow pitch, which is, I mean, there's competitive leagues, but normally what I was playing, I was way too competitive for what we were doing. Like they're drinking in the parking lot and I'm sliding into people and they're like, whoa, 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 that's too intense.
You're like, get Kim out of this beer league. Like we're not. Yeah.
So he kind of started showing me snatch. So I originally learned snatching, and I'm not very good at snatch. I'm actually kind of surprised that he tried to teach me snatch first, because I am not like, I'm an explosive athlete. I can't dance. I'm not smooth. Like, so snatch is probably not what I should start with. So, but that's what I first started learning. But I still really like fell in love with the, you know, we say in the gym, tired body, clear mind. So, you know, when we get done with really hard training sets, you're like, you have a tired body, but your mind is clear. You know, you're not worried about your day-to-day things because you've been so focused on this one task that you can't even think about the bills that need to get paid, the stuff that's going on at work. And so I really liked that centering part of it, where I could just space out and just train and decompress under compression. So, but I really fell in love with that part of it. It's so like rhythmic. I mean, it's probably the same way people feel about running, which I flippin' hate running. And it's running is the fucking devil's work.
The Venn diagram of people we talk to on this podcast and who like running, the middle of that diagram is very small. I'm just going to put it out. I'm just going to put it that way. There's very little. I did talk to Dr. Daniel Lieberman, who's a biomechanical and biology, human performance and biology researcher. And he was like the only one I've talked to on the podcast in the past probably year who styles himself a runner. Everyone else, you mentioned running, you're in good company.
They're like, yeah.
Don't worry about it.
It's good to know. Yeah, I never understood that. Well, I mean, I know based on kettlebell, like how people can just get in that zone and be like, I'm just loving the movement. And, you know, I enjoy like trying to figure out like how I can speed up the rep, it, you know, do less work to get more reps, how I can change my breathing to accomplish all those things. And like trying to figure out each part of that piece of the puzzle, like is what makes it fun. You know, how am I going to make my workout a little bit harder this week so I can edge over that line just a little bit more? That's what I fell in love doing that. And I did snatch for like, probably like 2 years working with him. And I kind of got to a point that I just wasn't making progress. So then I stopped working with a coach and I just started like training on my own. And that also wasn't that great because as anybody knows, like even if you are a coach, you need a coach. And that's kind of where I started working with my current coach who I've had for like the last like 7 years. I don't know. I've had him for a long time. So, and then that's when we started working on long cycle and I was way better at that.
Now, who is your coach?
Arseniy Zernikov is my coach.
Is he based in Russia or the United States?
Mm-hmm. He's in St. Petersburg.
Okay. So I met him in Russia.
Yeah. Yeah. I met him at a seminar and, we kind of hit it off. And then, like 2 years probably after that seminar, I hit him up and I was like, hey, you know, I really need a coach and I want to work on 24 kilogram long cycle, but this is single bell because back when I started, women could only do one bell long cycle.
Well, they were only allowed to do one bell long cycle.
They were only allowed to do one bell long cycle because, the worry was that it might damage our breasts, you know, like you got to worry about the titties, you know? So, and that, maybe it would cause cancer. I'm not sure. So there was a worry that our internal organs could be damaged by these bells and the weight sitting on us and our breasts might be hurt. So you weren't allowed to do it. It was ridiculous. And so when I approached him about this, I was like, hey, I want to single arm long cycle. And he was like, okay. Somebody's going to listen to this in my Russian and be like, oh my gosh, that's so offensive. He was like, how about instead of one arm, we do two arm long cycle. And I was like, well, where am I going to do that? And he said, I don't know. We'll find a place.
He saw something in you early on then. He was like, and he was also trusted that the sport might evolve.
Yeah. So yeah, I think he had been trying to find somebody, a girl to take this to do this. I think he had been thinking about it for a while and I probably just happened to contact him like just at the right time. And he's like, oh girl, big shoulders. She got it. She can do it.
He's like, you're his perfect guinea pig for this experiment.
Yeah. So, and I was like, okay, well let's do it. And so that's kind of like where the whole process started. And you know, when I got into this sport, I was really very new to it and I wasn't like in the whole competition circuit. So I really didn't know a lot of people. And when I started doing, or, you know, people started realizing that I wanted to do two arm long cycle, I got a lot of like really negative feedback. It was kind of surprising. And there was like a lot of negative feedback from women too. I mean, I guess never directly to me, but about me. It was interesting. Like, it was an interesting experience to see how people reacted to their sport potentially evolving or changing, like just people that are, I don't want to say like it was bad because, you know, they're reacting that way because they love it, not because they hate me. I mean, they might hate me, but
yeah, we, to be
not
fair,
because
we don't,
they hate
we don't
me particularly.
They may have, unless you've talked to all of them. I'm kidding. I'm sure they didn't.
No. But just their, you know, natural human reaction to potentially seeing something that they love changing and their particular part that they like about it, you know, maybe going away, which it never has. Like there's still single arm long cycle that men and women do at competitions, but it was interesting.
So when did two arm long cycle start to become something a little bit more, I guess two arm long cycle and also two arm jerk as part of the biathlon as well?
Technically, I think we should just call it long cycle.
Okay.
Because there's only long cycle, which is with two bells, and then single arm long cycle. But so that's an interesting. So when you say two arm long cycle, so they've never called it two arm long cycle until women started to do long cycle. And then all of a sudden there was like this delineation between we need to call it two arm long cycle because we know it's a woman doing it versus, I don't know, it's,
It is a little bit of an interesting technicality. So, well, it's like, okay, so there was always the snatch. There was never a squat snatch. It was always a snatch or a power snatch. Then CrossFit comes along, and for some reason, they start specifying, okay, this is a squat snatch versus a power snatch. So suddenly that became a thing, whereas weightlifters were always like, it was always just a snatch. What are you talking about? So these terms do change, but when did two-arm long cycle or long cycle with two bells, whatever you want to call it, when did that start becoming something that women could actually compete in? Because up until, you know, we're at 2013, 2014, and it still seems like the standard is one-arm long cycle for women. When did we start to see that change?
So in the United States and in some other countries and various organizations, so let's see, when I started doing two-arm long cycle when right after my son was born. So it would have been 2014. Now I'm a bad mom because I'm like, when was he born? 2014. So it probably would have been because he's born in March. And I think I started with Arseny in like October. Because I was out of school, a military school, when I started with him. So we're talking about 2014. Then I had a whole 6 months before I did my first kind of little competition. So 2015 is when you started seeing some girls in competition. Now, the OKC or Orange Kettlebell Club with the IKO, they started doing, they had their first world competition, I'm going to say 2017, but it might have been 16. 2016, 2017, they had the first competition where we had a platform of women doing long cycle with professional weight.
Which is 24, so kilos, which is 24 kilos.
Correct. So, we're going to have, I'm so bad with names. It's horrible. You know, being in the army, everybody's got a name tape on. So I literally don't have to memorize anybody's name. And so it really transitions over to my civilian life. And my husband's so good at remembering names. I'd be like, who's that person? They're like, I'm like, I know them, but I can't remember their name. But we had, I think there was a platform of six girls that we had up there doing 24 kilogram long cycle in 2016. Then 2017, IKO organized a huge competition. I think they had like 230 people competing, which in the US is quite large. But we had, it was so amazing to see, we had women from like all over the world come in, and we had, I think they had 12 platforms, and we had 12 women up there doing long cycle. And so like somebody took a picture of this like long row of just like all these women doing long cycle. And it was pretty cool. So Beata came, and she's from Norway. There was Abigail was there, and she's from Scotland. There was women from like all over the world. And so that was like the very first time that you saw like more than just like me there, or more than just like one or two. There was like a whole platform of women competing. So there's a couple different organizations within the kettlebell sport world, just like, you know, there is for wrestling or anything else.
Powerlifting, we see that.
Yeah.
Most strength sports, the exceptions being weightlifting and CrossFit, basically.
And hopefully within all those organizations, they don't get along either. But so, I mean, everybody's vying for, you know, athletes' money, spectators' money. So it's, I mean, I get why they don't. But now the...
Well, let me ask one different question here while you're thinking of that. What are some of the places you have been able to compete? So you talk about this competition with a lot of international lifters coming to the US, 230 lifters in 2017. What are some places that you've been able to compete overseas?
So I was in Korea, in Seoul, in 2019. I was in Denmark. I did a competition over there. I've been to Russia and trained, but I didn't compete there. I had a competition in Canada. Where else have we been? So Scotland.
Your coach is still in Russia. Do you train virtually? Like, do you film yourself and then send him the sets or do it over Zoom or something like that?
Yes. Well, no, I mean, we don't do anything over Zoom, but, usually he programs for me. Now at the beginning of my training, when I first started, I would send him videos, like just clips, and he'd tell me like I looked awful, or whatever. I don't know I'm sure you've had dealings with, Russians, and, they are very direct. So,
my grandmother's, you know, extremely Russian, and I can attest to that.
They're very direct. So, and Arseny has his own sense of humor. But I remember one time, like I had sent him some stuff and I was sending him my weights, like for what weight I was going to compete at. And, he was like, he had said something about my weight. I was like, are you saying I'm fat? And he was like, no, he's like, you're light, like lead feather. I was like, so, yeah. So it, you know, but, I think that's pretty much it. I'm trying to think. We've been to Belgium, but I just trained people there. I didn't compete there. So those are like the main ones. I mean, really, I've only been traveling internationally for long cycle form, because it's really only been able to do it for like really the last, since 2017. So it hasn't been that many years.
Do you have any particular marks in your head that you want to shoot for in your competitive career? I know that most lifters have, you know, if it's powerlifting, it's a 1,000-pound squat or an 800-pound squat. If it's weightlifting, it's snatching or clean and jerking this much. We know you have the all-time world record. Is there a mark that you think that you are really aiming to push that to during your career?
Well, you know, I am getting older, so
that is how it works over time.
I hit my prime like a couple of years ago. So, you know, right now I've been working on biathlon, which is, jerks and then snatch. And so I would really like to hit 200 points in biathlon. So how they figure out the points for biathlon, it's the number of jerks that you do in a 10-minute set. And then you usually rest, you know, maybe an hour or whatever, depending on how, where it falls in the competition. So, and then you snatch. And so the snatch is only half a point. So basically I need to work up to where I can do, because I can only really, now I can snatch about 105 reps, which is so low still. It's so embarrassing.
It's still, but combined, you still have the world record. And yeah. I just want to put it out, between, if you combine the jerk and the snatch, which is what matters, you don't get an award for the individual ones.
You don't.
You still have the world record, and here you are, but sure, you know what, we'll lean in. You're terrible at snatch. You absolutely must.
Yeah, it's bad.
Or the world will end. What are you aiming for?
So 200 points for that. So that would be 150 jerks and 100 snatches. Or yeah, 150 jerks and 100 snatches. So right now, I think I haven't done a 10-minute set for jerk in a little bit because I never do test sets. So I'm probably somewhere around the 120 mark right now, I think. My last competition, I did 113. So I think I'm probably close to 120 right now.
And so you need to get to, okay, so the snatch, so... That makes sense. Snatches are half a point. Jerks are a full point, which also makes sense.
Yeah, because the one bell, two bells. Yeah.
That does make sense, but it is a little demoralizing because like the snatch, it's not like you can do two at once in competition, right? It's not like you're getting half a point. That seems like you're not doing enough work almost.
There is Stephen, I'm going to mess up his name, Stephen Dockman. That's not how you say his name. I know it isn't, but he is trying to start like doing double snatching. So I have a competition in May against, it's a virtual competition against a girl, and it's double snatch. So it's 2 20-kilogram bells, double snatching. And now I'm shooting for like 100 reps.
Okay. In 10 minutes.
I can get it.
Still 10
in
minutes.
In 10 minutes. Yeah. Still you can't put it down. Like, but that's an interesting challenge. So but yeah, so for biathlon, and eventually, because I stopped doing long cycle because I started to have knee issues, just, you know, age.
I was going to say, is long cycle something you would consider pursuing again? But it seems like that might be more of a, you had a legit reason to kind of tone that back a little bit.
Yeah, I love long cycle so much. It's been really hard, like not getting to do it. I love doing it, and I hate snatching so much. Snatching is like running to me. So, I mean, I like jerks. It's fine, but the rhythmic part of cleaning the bells and jerking and the movement, I really like it. And so, not being able to do it kind of sucks. So, I do plan on going back to my knees better now. So, I'm probably going to go back to it. But I set a goal to do 200 points with biathlon, so I want to try and finish that before I jump back over to jerks or to long cycle.
And just for those who might not know, we're kind of coming up toward the interview. I should have asked this early on. So your all-time world record, the most any woman at any body weight class has ever done in long cycle, 10-minute long cycle, is 82 reps with the 24 kilo bells. What is the next best mark that has been done by a lifter not named Kim Fox?
There is a Russian girl that she did 81 at this last world competition.
Oh, okay. So fairly close.
So there's some, they're getting close.
Okay. Okay. I see. For a while there, because if I remember correctly, looking back into some of, I was doing some research and looking back into like some of the archives, I didn't realize anyone had gotten that close. There was a point where you were like there's a pretty big margin between you and everyone else. It was a bit like Jerry Rice's touchdown record. It's like him. Then you drop 30% and it's like the next person. For a while, there was a pretty big gap.
For a while, it was just me and Beata, and we had gotten pretty close. And then, you know, there was actually one where she beat my record and my husband stayed up all night to check what her score was. And I was just like, I'm going to bed, you know, I don't want to know. And so she had beat my score by like a point. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, so, but then it just lucked out that like 2 weeks later, I had a competition coming up, and that's when I set then I jumped way ahead because I had been stuck in the 70s for like a year or more. Like I was making no progress. Like my numbers in training were going up, but I could not break 80 to save my life. And it was getting really frustrating going to competition after competition. And I only compete like every quarter. So, but going to comp and getting like the same number, it sucked so bad. It was really demoralizing to be so stressed about it. Like, is this going to be the one? Is everything going to fall into place? And this is the one, like, it's gotta be getting close. Like my numbers are getting better. And then, like I said, she beat me by like a point. I think we were at like, I think I was at like 76 or 77 and she got 78. And then, for anybody that doesn't know, normally like for kettlebell gains, especially in the professional division, once you're conditioned and stuff, you usually see like one or two reps over the course of 6 months. Like you're not seeing like these huge jumps. So then I came back and I competed at a competition actually with Dennis.
For those who don't know Dennis, this is Dennis. Give you a little background as to who that is.
Okay, so Dennis, he owns multiple world records, a Russian lifter. He actually, he comes from a weightlifting background, like a bodybuilding background. He's probably going to come back and be like, that's not true. And I'm like, no. But I'm pretty sure that he comes from a bodybuilding background. Then he got started in kettlebell sport. He teaches at the OKC gym in California near Berkeley. Super nice guy. Someone told me once, he's like, he just gives the best hugs. I didn't say that. That came from somebody else. He does give good hugs though.
But if you ever
see him and you need a good one.
This guy is
he's amazing.
He's probably one
just
of the
machine.
Shortlisted for one of the best male kettlebell sport athletes of all time.
Yes. And he's, I'm trying to think how old he is now.
He's like mid to late 30s.
Yeah. I mean, but if you see him, I always feel like he looks kind of like a cyclist. Like body wise, like with quad size. And I just always feel like he looks a little bit like a cyclist, but he's like one of those people that he's just an endurance machine. Like he can do like 100 dips without stopping. He can do like 100 pull-ups without stopping and not like kipping pull-ups. He can do like for real pull-ups. Like, sorry.
Sorry to all the CrossFitters listening in.
Aren't real pull-ups.
CrossFitters, this is where you turn off the podcast and you go leave a 5-star review and you stop listening. This is where.
So, but I mean, he's just an endurance machine. He's just an amazing lifter. And he has, I feel like I've sat through some classes with him and we've talked about, you know, lifting protocols and how he trains. And he trains so different to the way that I train. Just the volume that he does is different. He also runs a lot. So I'm guessing he makes up his volume in running and those other things. But yeah, he's an amazing lifter. I think his I don't know if it's still a world record, but his record for 2-on-1 cycle, I think it was like 102 or 105 reps. It was something, it's a lot. And he's not that big of a guy. I mean, he's decently tall. I think he's maybe 180 pounds, 190
yeah, he's like an
pounds,
85,
maybe.
85 kilo lifter. And he's roughly, and the 2-arm-long cycle for men, that's 232 kilo bells. So if you're in like a normal gym, the big red bells, he's just doing those nonstop for 10 minutes and he's pretty darn good at it. So
yeah.
So Dennis is often considered, he lives in the US now, so he's the best active male kettlebell sport athlete. You're his counterpart on the women's side, basically.
So I was at a competition with him and we were going to lift at the same time. And he had somebody counting for him, like out loud. Well, when I'm competing, I don't really use a clock. We have a clock in front of us that's going, tells us the seconds and everything, but I pace myself off my breathing. So I know that 3 breaths in rack is about 80 reps per minute. Hmm.
8 reps a minute, not 80.
Oh, sorry. 8 reps, not 80 reps per minute. Yeah, that'd be really fast. So 8 reps per minute. So I could complete 80 reps in 10 minutes. So that's all I do. I sit in rack and I do my little breathing pattern and I say, okay, that's 3rd breath. It's time for rep. And I'm actually very bad at counting. So usually I have to have my husband stand in front of me and he counts with his fingers about what breath I'm on. So I don't forget. Because I just get in a zone and I'll just be breathing, just, you know, and then he'll be like 3. I'm like, okay, it's time for a rep. And so I do that. So it just makes it easy for me to keep a set tempo, even though sometimes I might go 7 reps, but my body is always ready for the next rep because it's just a set. Anyway, so he had a lady counting for him out loud, you know, 1, 2, you know, and somewhere around minute 5, she said 7, and I thought I was at 8, and but then I got confused and I didn't know what number I was on. So then I just did another rep, and then I was like, still not sure. And there was time left on the clock for that minute. And so I did another rep. And I think in that round, I did like 10 reps, which is bad. You don't ever want to speed up your reps in the middle of the set, especially when I was only halfway done. And so not that you're going to go watch the video, but if you were watching the video, you would see there was a period where I like did a bunch of reps, and then I really kind of struggled for a second because then my heart rate kicked up because I just did 2 extra reps in a minute. And I was like, okay, like starting to get, I'm like, oh, this is not going well. This isn't going well at all. And so I just kind of kept going, and I was still doing my breathing rate and counting my breaths. And I got towards the end because I'm still not really paying attention to my rep count. Like, I don't know how many reps I'm doing a minute. I just know I'm doing a rep every 3 breaths. And we get to the end, and there's like a couple, 10 or 15 seconds left on the clock, and I just hit 80, which is past my number. And I'm like, oh shit. Okay, I guess we need to get some more reps in here. So then I did 2 more reps, and then we put it down. And really, like, the whole reason that I went over 80 was because I miscounted because she was counting out loud.
I wonder if Dennis seems like such a nice guy. I wonder if he did that purposefully. He's like, I have a strategy that's going to help Kim break through her own barriers. And from my experience in the kettlebell sport community so far, everyone's super friendly. So that seems to be like, that seems like something someone might even do.
It's very possible, he never said that, but I mean, I guess I could claim that victory to Dennis. I mean, honestly, he's such a fun lifter, like just a fun person, that day when we competed, it was just really an enjoyable lift. Even though 5 minutes in, I started to like question my life choices. When you have situations like that, where you have a positive environment, like, I think that's what really, you end up getting those really great lifting moments, because the people around you really make that positive environment and make you have that good day. And the nice thing about the organization that Dennis runs, the IKO, is that his whole theory is to make the competition great for the lifter. Like, he's like, I don't care about anything else. Like, I want the lifters to enjoy it. I want the lifters to have fun. I want whatever we're doing to be a benefit to the lifter, So, what can we do to make that positive experience so that every lifter up there has their PR? And most competitions are not like that. And so I always try and make it out to his competitions because they're always very enjoyable. And I almost always, that's where I set my records, are at his competitions. So I think it's one thing that, a lot of organizations, not just kettlebell, that they miss.
Is focusing on the lifter experience, because that's ultimately, look, kettlebell sport is, surprise, surprise, not the biggest spectator sport in the world at this point. It'll hopefully grow over the next few years.
Have you watched kettlebell sport?
It's a little bit repetitive, but hopefully that grows over the next few years. But really focusing on the lifters, hey, that's what we can hope in all strength sports, making sure they have a fun and safe experience. Kim, we're kind of coming to the end of the normal time here, but I want folks to know where they can follow along with you, your training, your coaching, all that good stuff. What's the best place to follow you?
On Instagram, I'm under Kettlebell Kim Fox. And then on Facebook, I'm under Kimberly C. Fox. And on YouTube, I think it's also under Kettlebell Kim Fox.
Just go to YouTube, so, look up Kettlebell Kim Fox.
If you type in Kim Fox Kettlebell, it'll come up,
Excellent. Well, Kim, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us. It was awesome learning about your experience in the sport and some of the variations in training, and especially your experience with the broader kettlebell sport community. So I know a lot of folks in quarantine have gotten into kettlebell training at home. So who knows, if you're really enjoying it, maybe look into kettlebell sport. You could be the next Kim Fox. Hopefully the next Kim Fox is listening to this podcast right now. Wouldn't that be cool?
It would be.
All right, Kim.
I hope there's another Kim Fox, because I want to see other people doing this.
You want to see your records broken, which is kind of a
fun thing to say.
Well, on that note, we will wrap things up. Thanks so much for joining us, Kim.
Thank you.